Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and my guest today, we're going to talk a lot about fabric. Everybody's got fabric in common. My first two guests that I'm going to be having on, groups of guests, are book authors, and then we're going to be talking with the director at the Quilt Alliance, and this is going to be so exciting. A Quilt Alliance is a fabulous organization. So first, I have Rebecca Silball here, who loves fabric and loves quilting. You know, you just have to, you have to relate to that, don't you? She has a new book out, and her book is called Simply Scrappy, Get the Look You Love with Fat Quarters and Pre-Cuts, which I think is totally fascinating because we love scrappy, but we also love to buy those packages because they're absolutely gorgeous. So, Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is so exciting to have you on the show. I was reading, you know, your site and looking at your background. Tell me a little bit about how you started quilting.
Well, it kind of is a big, huge accident, actually. I went to school for graphic design, thought it was a great career, thought I'd really enjoy it. And in school, they teach you that it's all going to be creative and wonderful, and you get to do all these great things, and it wasn't. So at the time, my mom actually owned a quilt shop, which she still owns today. So I started hanging out there a little bit more, and the fabric started calling to me. And then I realized that it was all the stuff I learned in design school that basically translated into quilts. And so that's kind of what got me started.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, where is your mom's store at?
It's Cotton Pickers Quilt Shop. It's in Chardon, Ohio, so northeast Ohio. We're in that wonderful little snow belt that is getting pummeled with stuff this last week or so.
Oh, yeah, I looked on your blog, and I saw your dogs looking at the window at all the snow. So
yes.
Very cute.
Quite a bit.
So, you know, I think this is really fascinating because I meet a lot of quilters who had a graphic arts background, and it's really the fiber that spoke to them. You know, when you got into the quilt shop, did you work in the quilt shop with your mom?
Basically, I started out when she was having shop hops or if she knew she was going to have a large group, I was there just as add-on help. And then, like I said, once my graphic design job started driving me crazy, then I started helping more and more and then ended up actually leaving the graphic design job to work at the quilt shop.
Yeah. So, yeah, what did you find out specifically? Like, you know, how did your sort of ability to look at things the way you do, you know, which is sort of a personal thing, how did you translate that to helping the customers?
Well, basically, my main thing is the color and the texture, you know, not to be afraid of it. And I find a lot of people are, and that was actually a huge inspiration for the book. But a lot of people, they just are so fearful of color. And that's one of the comments I hear the most is people are just think that they're afraid of it. And it's like, well, you get dressed every day. You decorate your house, and you like color. You just don't know you like color.
So what do you do with a person who's there, they have a stack of fabric, and they have an idea? How do you help them sort of work through that?
Each person is a little different. It just depends on where their skills that they think lie and what they're trying to attain. So if they've already got some fabric going, usually what I'll do is if people come in and go, okay, I want to make this quilt and I want to make it in greens, I let them kind of go a little bit and start picking out. Because my version of, say, if they're looking for a sage green, my sage green and their sage green and your sage green are all probably different. So I kind of let them go and get a feel for what they're doing. And then just kind of offering some different insights, like different textures, maybe different sizes of pattern, whatever might work best with their design that they're trying to do, and what they feel comfortable with. You can pretty much tell, you know, right off the bat if you pull something off the shelf by the look on their face whether they really like it or not.
Right, right. You sure can, can't you? You're like, okay, well, let's do something
sometimes
different.
Sometimes you get that look like, oh, no, I'm putting that back. Don't even think, forget that
it's
I even pulled it off.
So tell me, how did all this translate into your book? Because I think this is a fabulous, fabulous concept. Because we love to buy the collections. And then people just adore using everything in a quilt that they possibly can, a scrappy quilt. So what's your approach for your book?
Okay, yeah. Like I said, one of the main things that I hear in the quilt shop, especially when we do shows and other things, we have lots of samples hanging, and a lot of people like the scrappier things that we do, and they're like, oh, but that's hard. And through doing, I've done lots of recipes for the Moda Bake Shop, and through doing that, I kind of, a light bulb went off, and I went, oh, wait, you get that scrappy look without all the overwhelming stigma that it's all these fabrics. All the fabric decision is done for you. So you can add in different things. You can do different, like all of us have gone to a shop and there's that fabric line or that charm pack or jelly roll that just stings to us and we have to take it home. We don't know why, but we have to. And then you take it home and you go, what the heck do I do with it? Well, then, you know, like I said, it kind of gives you that ability to go, wait, I can make this thing that I thought was too hard, and I already have the fabrics for it. And it's not, it's taking all the hassle out of it and all that stigma and all of that preconceived notion that these are really hard things when they're not.
You know, what I like about your book, Rebecca, is to me, the very first quilt in your book is called Snow in June, which I hope to goodness I never see snow in June in Virginia. But
unfortunately, I think we have maybe up here.
What I like is that it's a very simple block. It's easy to break down. Can you describe that quilt?
Sure. Yeah, that one, it's a basic timeless block. It's actually two blocks. It's a nine patch and a snowball, which everybody's seen, everybody's kind of done, but mine, I've twisted them up, and that's what a lot of the books, or the patterns in the book you'll find, they're traditional aspects of the little twist. So there's, like the snowballs and nine patches, which give you that, they're simple pieces, they're easy to make, they're very fast, but it gives you a different result than all the ones you've seen in antique quilts.
Right. I think that that's, it's very, very effective, and you're very clever. It's a very clever quilt that I think can step people into that scrappy with a package kind of look. Do you have a favorite in the book? I know you're allowed to tell me.
I do. I have to say I think I do. I think Aura, as of right now, is my favorite one. You know, every time I finished one of the projects for the book, it was my favorite for that day. And I don't know if this did it, but Aura was the last quilt that I made, and I actually had different fabrics picked out for it, and I started it, and with making the book, I was also working a full-time job and doing long-arm quilting on the side, so I was getting about zero sleep some days, and I wasn't thinking, I wasn't following my own directions and screwed it up, so I had to completely start over and redo it. But I love how this one came out so much more than the one I originally started with. So that one, and it's just the colors, and it's so fun, and it's just, I don't know, love it.
Yeah, it's very, very gorgeous. And it's a curved block, it has some curved blocks in that one. Is that right? Or
no, it's all straight seams.
Well, how about that?
Looks
it looks
curved.
Like curves. Ugh.
It's a little fake out, and it's nice because it's that one uses a charm pack, and so it's readily available pieces that you can get, but it's straight, simple piecing, but it's the way that you put it together gives it that illusion. So it's small enough that if you want to try and bump up your piecing skills because you've got some different pieces in there, it's not just corner-to-corner seams, then it's small enough you can try it without being too overwhelming with a large project.
Perfect. People have to check out your book, Seemingly Scrappy. Get the look you love with fat quarters and pre-cuts. Rebecca's book with Martingale, The Patchwork Place. You have some favorite techniques, Rebecca. What is? Tell me about one of them.
Well, I like all sorts of stuff, but probably my favorite thing is especially to get the scrappy style. I do not have a large stash because I use it a lot, so it's this whole everybody in the pool mentality. I have done several quilts with my stash, and it's nice because you can throw in a piece of something that you didn't know that you had and just kind of shake it up and let it just happen, and you get the most beautiful results that way.
Ooh,
yeah.
Fun. So you just sort of take something that might be, would it be the same color family or just anything?
I like the ones where it's just anything. So, like, the quilt that's on the cover of the book, Seemingly Scrappy, is called Coinage, and that one is all sorts of different batiks, and there's one in there in particular, this peachy kind of pinkish tone. Mm-hmm. And when I had all the fabrics in there, I didn't like it, but if I took it away, it just kind of went flat, so... And when it was all finished, I love how the end result came out. So sometimes just adding in that little sparkle that you didn't know that you were missing.
Yeah, it makes it a little less matchy-matchy, you know. When,
Yeah, and that's a big thing, too, is people think that you have to be matchy-matchy, where you just need to be kind of in the same family in a certain sense. Whether it's the scale of the fabrics or the colors, it doesn't have to be all the same thing. You can blend in lots of different things.
And now your website is called rubybluequilts.blogspot.com, and you have some tutorials. Tell me about what's on that page.
Well, I've got all sorts of tutorials on there, from just general sewing. There's binding basics on there, to scarves and small quilts, and there's recipes on there as well. So I try to cover a bit of different things, and... there's going to be more added. There's just not enough hours in the day to get everything on there.
That's right. I know how you feel. So, and do you travel around? Do you go and teach and lecture outside of your home area?
I just started traveling recently, actually. Last week I was in Pittsburgh talking to a guild, and I do some regional fabric shows, and I do those pretty much about every few months or so, but I'm hoping to travel more this year, and I'm actually planning on posting a schedule on my blog here shortly.
Oh, very good. And do you end up in the quilt shop as much now, or are you more busy than that?
It's very sporadic. The long-arm quilting has been keeping me quite busy, so I don't get to be at the quilt shop as often as I'd like. But I'm still there on occasion, so.
Well, Rebecca, this has been wonderful. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Everybody visit Rebecca Silbaugh and see her new book at rubybluequilts.blogspot.com. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we'll be right back after the tune.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, Hello Luscious by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Get quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox.
Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. And we have more fabric talk because fabric makes the quilt. You're going to find out how authors Andrea Johnson and Kelly Biscopink have written about it in their modern book called Modern Designs for Classic Quilts. It's a book from Krause. What I love is that they share a passion for the historic quilts and making them fresh and new. So we're going to learn all about that. Hi, Andy, and hi, Kelly.
Hi, Pat.
Hi, Pat.
Ah, okay, so which one's Kelly's voice? Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Pat.
Okay, there we go. And then Andy. So it's good to have you guys on here. Kelly, tell me how you and Andy met.
We met a little over 2 years ago at the very first meeting of the Cincinnati Modern Quilt Guild. There weren't a whole lot of people to show up to the first one, of course, but Andy and I were both there and started chatting, and the rest was history. So,
Andy, do you remember that?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. That was one of the best days of my life, honestly.
That's what most people say when they meet me for the first time.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There you go. So, you know, where along the way did the two of you decide you should write a book together, Andy?
Kelly and I have had had lots of discussions about what was going on in the quilt scene at the time, which there is still a little bit going on of the us versus them chatter of modern versus traditional. And we didn't like it. We talked a little bit about it, and we thought, you know, this is our style. We love traditional quilts, and we love the modern scene. And I don't know. We just kind of said, let's write a book. And Kelly said, okay. So that's kind of how it went. It wasn't any kind of epiphany or major event.
So you had a shared love and then just thought you'd want to collaborate because you
Absolutely.
Were good friends.
Yes, exactly.
So, Kelly, what's the goal of your book, Modern Designs for Classic Quilts?
The goal was, I mean, I think there are a lot of goals. The book's really structured to appeal to everyone. You know, we wanted everybody who quilts to be able to pick this book up and find something that appealed to them or represented them in some way. And just like Andy was saying, you know, the whole inspiration for the book to begin with comes from our backgrounds as quilters, and that's something we wanted to share with everyone else, that you don't just have to be traditional and you don't just have to be modern. We're all quilters, and we all find common ground there. So, you know, the goal is really just to show that, you know, there isn't a rule, there isn't a pattern you have to follow. You can take the parts and pieces you like from all of these different themes and movements and traditions and make something that really represents you. And, you know, I hope that we were successful in that, so...
Well, I really like that the front of the book has a lot of step-outs, step-by-step for different techniques. So that's really nice.
That has been a very popular part of the book. I think a lot of people really love that. We went through each step very intentionally to show, because it is a skill-building book, really. Mm-hmm. You know, for modern quilters who really want to keep pushing themselves to build their skills. And so that has been a really popular part of the book.
Right, because it's not just, you know, squares and rectangles and letting the fabric talk. You've got curves, you've got sort of diamonds, you know, which are a little trickier with the first time out. You've got paper piecing, hexagon. Mm-hmm. So it is a skill-building book. Excellent. Good for you guys.
Thanks.
So... let's see. I'm, you know, sort of when two people work together on a book, you know, you have to figure out what kind of quilts are going to go in it. Did you each have a set of quilts that you wanted to do? You know, what did the process look like to develop the quilts that would be in this book?
It was very organic, actually. We both had quilts that we naturally just really wanted to include, just some of our own personal favorites.
And then the list grew also out of this desire to include a lot of different techniques. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we definitely wanted to have curve piecing in there, and we wanted to have something with diamonds, and we wanted to include ruffles, and, you know, we wanted to have it just really kind of meaty in terms of what people could pick up technique-wise as well. So, you know, there some of the things we just really wanted to include and wanted to be in there, and then, you know, other things derived more from a technique that we really wanted to include.
Andy, did you work on the quilts together, you and Kelly, or did you each work on your own quilts?
We did it on our own. We wrote the patterns, and we did the quilts on our own, and then we wrote the book, the front matter, and the dialogue together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Were there any challenges did you guys have for, you know, did you do this? Did you get together at your houses? I mean, it's a big project to do a book.
Absolutely. Kelly and I did fabric shop several times together, which was a hoot because... You know, sometimes those quilts come together very quickly. You know exactly what you want. You know the fabrics that you want, and you pick them very quickly. And sometimes, for example, the New York Beauty in there that I made, I agonized over that quilt for months. And mm-hmm. we've shopped for fabric for that thing for months. And so there were, you know, things that any quilter goes through when they're making a quilt that's important to them. But in addition to that, you're writing patterns and you're writing a book, and that's a whole different set of challenges. So, yeah.
Well, it was so nice to have a secondary person that was just as committed to having a really great end product with no bias to it to mm-hmm. bounce ideas off of. You know, so we were constantly shooting each other photos of things we were thinking about or sketches, and being really honest with our responses if we liked it or didn't like it.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
it was a nice team.
So what do you look for? Maybe Andy first, I'll ask both of you. Andy, what do you look for in fabric when you want to make a quilt that looks modern, but you're using a traditional pattern?
I am very drawn to geometric, and I really love juicy colors. I love lime greens and vibrant oranges and bright pink. So I'm very drawn to things that are bright. And then when I think about a traditional pattern, how can I use the scale and the color together to really optimize, you know, the identity factor of whatever I'm making. So basically, I just really love florals, and I'm really kind of a sucker for polka dots too. So,
So Kelly, how about you? What are you doing fabric-wise when you're making a traditional quilt look modern?
You know, I think a lot of modern quilts have been defined by negative space and very clean backgrounds, and that's usually what I try to include, you know, whether it be a solid white or a solid gray or a solid black or navy blue background. And then, I mean, I'm all about bright color. I like trying to sneak in, you know, really interesting prints and things like that, and putting things you wouldn't expect to go together.
Mm-hmm. Like, what was an example of something that you wouldn't expect to go together that you used? Can you think of one?
I think the kaleidoscope quilt's a perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Risky Business in the book, which was actually kind of a joke about the fabric combinations.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a two-fabric quilt, but one of them, they're both prints, and one of them's a polka dot and one of them's a diamond, and those two things really shouldn't go together. And for some mm-hmm. reason, I had bought each piece of fabric intending to use them in separate quilts, and somehow they just wound up together on my shelf. And I was like, oh, that's the kaleidoscope quilt right there. Mm-hmm. And it worked, and I was, you know, kind of biting my fingernails the whole way through it going, oh, man, I hope I like this when it's done. And I do. I think it works. But it's not something that you would intentionally go out to seek to put together in a quilt like that.
And it's sort of a low contrast quilt too, since the prints.
It is.
Yeah, if you were to take a black and white photo of it or look at it through a red, you know, viewfinder thing, it would be very low contrast. Yeah, it's very gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's low contrast, and the prints are very similar scale. Yeah, it's not what you would normally have.
Fun to do something different. You can always make more quilts too, you know.
Exactly. What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah. So, Andy, do you travel and teach?
I do. I just made a commitment to go and talk in Denver next year, and I'll be teaching kind of like, I don't know, in the Midwest next year.
Good. And give us your website.
It's andyjohnsonsews.com.
Fabulous. So everybody can find you there. And Kelly, how about you? Are you traveling to teach anywhere? Is that part of what you do?
I am. I'll go anywhere you want me to go. So I love to travel. And I've just recently moved. I used to live in Cincinnati, of course, which is where I met Andy. But I recently moved to Charleston, South Carolina about 6 months ago. So I'm doing quite a bit of teaching in the local area. But hopefully more to come. And all of that's on my website as well.
Yeah, your website is stitchyquiltstuff.blogspot.com or just stitchyquiltstuff.com.
Just .com.
Well, thank you, Andy and Kelly. This has been great fun. Congratulations on your book.
Thank you, Pat.
We'll be right back after this break.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
To find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts & More magazines, go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Wasn't that fun to hear several different authors, you know, someone who works by herself with Rebecca, and then Andy and Kelly who work together. And a lot of it's about the fabric. Your quilts are about the fabric. Well, another thing that I love, and, you know, being on the radio, it feeds my soul to be able to be here and talk to people. And I love the stories. I love the stories about how people do things, why people do things. And I am more than pleased to be able to have the director of the Quilt Alliance on now to tell me a bit about this organization. Amy Milne has been with the group as the executive director for quite a long time, and she is just full of information to share with us this afternoon. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Pat. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Oh, this is just so exciting. I love the whole everything about the Quilt Alliance. It's like romance. It's like everything is, I just love the Quilt Alliance. You know, so I'm excited for you to come and tell us about it. Tell me about the history of it. How did it start?
Yeah, sure. The Quilt Alliance has been a nonprofit now for 20 years. This is our 20th year. It was founded in 1993 by four women, three of them on the quilt side, Carrie Bresnahan, Nancy O'Brien Puentes, and Shelley Ziegert. And Eunice Ray was another person involved on the sort of financial side. And those three visionary women decided that the quilt world, and really the entire world, needed a museum for quilts. And the idea of having an actual bricks and mortar museum in D.C. was sort of where they started, and then that the idea of that became sort of impractical. Thinking about who might be able to attend and travel to a quilt museum like that is kind of limited. And then they, you know, started thinking broader and more creatively about how the internet could be used to share information about quilts that really was already out there. You know, most states have done a quilt documentation
dissertation project, and many of them ended up, they sort of stopped at the cardboard box or the filing cabinet where all those photos and juicy documentation forms got filed, and there was no space online where all those histories could and photos could be shared.
Ah, so
yes.
So when did you start? When did you start with them? Because you've been with them a long time now.
Yeah, I started in 2006, so this is my seventh year. I'm starting my seventh year, and really it's been just such a great fit for me. My background is in fine art. My background is in textiles, too, but also in painting and drawing. And I had been teaching drawing and design at the college level and then had been working after that for a nonprofit for at-risk youth in the arts. And my kids were young at the time, and so I was looking for something that would sort of bring me more center to my family. Mm-hmm. And the Alliance was looking for a director because they were moving from Shelley Ziegert's home. She had provided for her home for years as the office.
Her hall closet.
No, it's a beautiful office, but she really sacrificed, that piece of her private life to do that, but they were looking to sort of professionalize their home and their director, and they chose Asheville, North Carolina. And I was living in Durham, and I grew up really close to here in Asheville, and I was looking for, an opportunity that would bring me closer to home. So it's really been, not only just a professional good fit, but a personal good fit.
Well, let's talk about the different components, because the Quilt Alliance actually had a name change very recently, right? You were used to be the Alliance for American Quilts for many, many years. And now with the Quilt Alliance, it really makes you more global.
Right. Well, we're not losing our focus at all on American quilts and quilters, but what we noticed is that our Facebook page, for instance, is growing. The group of folks who are participating and tuning into our content on Facebook are really from all over the place. And quilts in general are, quilting is really just spreading like wildfire. And so we wanted to be able to be inclusive of all those quilters and to find ways to use our own projects here, like Quilters SOS, Save Our Stories, as a model for other countries that might want to capture their oral history and share it alongside ours.
And the Alliance is, this organization is all on the internet. So you don't have a physical building. Nobody's going to come and visit you in a physical building.
No, you are all welcome to come and visit me here in Nashville. But you'd probably giggle if you saw the size of the room I'm in. It's really tiny. And we share the office. My colleague Debbie and I sort of alternate when we're here because it's so teeny. But we're in a space that we share with a couple other nonprofits and for-profit businesses. But all of our resources are pretty much online, and we do, QSOS is a project that we put on and we serve, and then we partner with Michigan State University, the museum there, and the Matrix Center on campus to bring to present the Quilt Index. But we do have events, we do Quilters Take Manhattan, which has become our annual event in New York City, and this year we'll be presenting our very first conference on quilts and oral history, and that'll take place in July. So more and more we're doing things that put us out there face to face, but I think that's why so many folks have not heard of the Alliance for American Quilts, now called the Quilt Alliance, because we've spent the greater part of 20 years to build these projects.
Well, let's talk first about the Quilters SOS, Save Our Stories, because that's what I'm doing with the radio show every single week, is hearing stories and different varieties, pieces and bits of quilters' lives. So what exactly is that program?
So Quilt Quilters SOS, Save Our Stories, QSOS for short, is an oral history project about quilters. So it's a grassroots project, and anyone anywhere who would like to try to do it can go to our website and view or download the manual. And there's some quick start guides there, too, guides for interviewers. And basically, you identify someone in your community that you would like to interview and preserve their story. Now, for a lot of us, I know here in Asheville in our guild, some of the charter members of that guild are getting older, in their 80s and some mm-hmm. of them in their 90s. And you feel, you know, the time spent with them is so valuable, and you feel so honored to hear their stories. But you think, well, my daughter, who's also a member of our guild, may mm-hmm. not get to hear those if we don't put them down on paper and on tape. So several members of my guild have volunteered for this, and they pick someone. They download all the necessary forms. They set a date to meet with them in their home or some other location. And the person who's to be interviewed picks a quilt that they want to talk about. And we call this a touchstone object. And it's not just in our interviews, but this is a technique used in oral history. You know, a way to elicit some memory or emotion or just a place to get started. You probably do, you know, pick sort of points to start the conversation with your all of your interviews. Right. And so we suggest that they pick a quilt because it's about their quilt making, and other things come out of, as you know, in an interview, you start in one point and you get to a surprisingly fun location at the end of the discussion that maybe you didn't expect. But so we have a list of questions, so the interviewer doesn't have to make the questions up. There's a list of questions. Yeah. And they sort of follow different areas. One is about that person's personal quilting history. Did they learn from a grandmother? Did they learn from a book? Did they take a class? And then the second part would be about their the space that they quilt in. And what is their style like? Do they like to take classes, or do they like to just learn from books or whatever? And then what are their who are their artistic inspirations? You know, what kinds of things do they look at? Do they do drawings? Do they prefer to do quilts from kits? And then the last part is to ask them about what they think, how they see what they're doing as a quilt maker in the context of American history, in the history of their family, in the history of women. You know, it's a very open-ended structure, and people all the time say, well, that's a great question, but I don't have an answer. let's move on. You know, we really try to stress that every person has an interesting history worthy of preserving. And to a historian 100 years from now, what you say about the kind of thread that you used or the job that you got to pay for the thread that you used or
it will be interesting to somebody. Yes.
And it will be relevant to the rest of American culture at that time.
So how many of these have you done? Do you have a rough guess?
Yeah, we have over, I think I just checked the other day, it's like 1,155 or something. So there's over 1,000 interviews, and these have been going on since 1999.
And they're all online?
They're all online. You can read the transcript. The audio portion is archived on a CD or a cassette tape in the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. So it's, you know, it's the only quilting oral history project about quilters of this size that's archived there. So it's really a point of pride for us to have it there, and also a point of security that we know that these archives are safe, and folks can go there and actually sit and listen to the tapes. And we hope that we'll get to the point soon where we can offer a portion of that audio on our website for each of the interviews.
Right, because you do have some video interviews on the site.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, in fact, that's another project called, well, there's two things that we do with video right now. One is a long-time project called Quilt Treasures, and that's a video web portrait project that includes, that really profiles quilters and individuals who were instrumental in pushing the quilt revival movement forward. And those include folks who maybe are known for their collecting and not quilt making, or their, you know, entrepreneurial accomplishments. There are, I think, about 13 profiles on the website, and they include a little documentary and interview snippets. You can hear one of my favorites, having been a young mother trying to accomplish things during the day with, despite her children's activities, is Yvonne Porcella talking about how she would, her kids were, you know, boom, boom, boom. I think she has four children, and they came one after another. And she would put a blanket on the floor of the kitchen or the workspace and put a box of cereal down and just sort of have them all playing. And she said, like, whatever I could get done within the time it would take them to devour one box of cereal was how much I could work on my quilt during that day.
I think the moms right now probably need this, you know. We're going to have a boon in cereal.
Right. High fiber, though, mind you. But
that's
still.
Right. Little boxes we could give them so they don't get too crazy. Cheerios. So in the SOS project, is there one that stands out in your, you know, for you personally that, that was interviewed, somebody you personally think, wow, you know, that's really great we have that?
Yeah, well, I enjoyed, one of the ones I mentioned in my email was that I got a chance to interview Michael Michalski recently, who's just really doing such amazing work in quilting. And it sort of falls between, he's one of those quilters whose work, to me, falls between traditional quilting and art quilting. And he works on Broadway. He's a dresser for, oh, now I'm blanking on the name. He's going to kill me on the name of his show. But, you know, he finds time to sort of, I'm sure he's always thinking about his quilts. But it was so interesting to interview him and hear about how he, his background in education and experience sort of took him to where he is now, and why the kinds of quilts that he makes. And then, you know, we talked about the back of his quilts, and we turned it over, and it was actually a quilt that was hanging in the National Quilt Museum in Paducah at the time. And the Paducah folks allowed us to do the interview right there in the gallery after hours.
Amy, we're going to take a little break.
Great.
And when we come back, we're going to talk some more about the Quilt Alliance.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
We're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases,
storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm here with the Executive Director, Amy Milne, of the Quilt Alliance. And Amy, just so people realize, they can actually read the interviews of the SOS on the site. So you have all the text there, which is wonderful.
Yeah, you can print them out. It makes a great, makes a nice story to print out and put in your purse next time you've got, you see some waiting time coming up. And, There are interviews with folks who are just starting out their quilting careers. There are interviews with folks who have been quilting for a long time who are quilt superstars, you know. We just did an interview, my colleague Meg Cox just did an interview with Barbara Brackman, which is fascinating. She is a very funny person, you know.
She is. I've had her on the show, too. I know Barbara. Yeah, she is a riot, you know.
I mean, she's really witty, and you and her, what she has to say about quilts and how they fit into history and culture is just fascinating. You know, and we just interviewed at the same time Lisa Alexander of Moda, and hearing her story about how she got into quilting and how that fits into her work life at Moda is just really neat.
Yeah, I want to read both of those. So tell me a little bit about the partnership with the Michigan State University, because that's a pretty important partnership.
Yeah, we partner with Michigan State University with the museum there, MSU Museum, and Matrix, which is a digital humanities center on campus, to bring, to produce and maintain the Quilt Index. And the Quilt Index is 10 years old this year, and it's a project that is is a database that's online. It's all free to use. It's quiltindex.org. And, you know, there's over 54,000 quilts documented in this resource. And that is not limited to quilts. Actually, it includes some ephemera like quilt patterns, quilt, you know, sketches of quilts, that kind of thing. And when I was talking about the quilt documentation projects done by states and different groups, many of those are included in this database, but there's also there are also private collections of quilts there and historical or museum collections. Michigan State Museum's collection is there, the DAR.
It's addicting. You could be there for days.
Oh, my goodness. So, you know, I find it to be really personally inspiring and enriching, but also just from a historical perspective, from, you know, to use it to see how these patterns have evolved, because you can do, you can use the Quilt Index. If you look at the website, there's a browse. You have a couple ways to look at the collection. You can either search very specific fields or you can browse. And one of the ways you can browse is by pattern. And, you know, I find that really fun to go to a specific pattern like Baltimore Album, but or one that's, you know, maybe even more of a standard repeating pattern that you'd see a lot of variety in, like orange peel or even just a nine patch. And then it will show you quilts from, you know, four centuries that, and you can see how quilters have evolved and changed and then gone back again.
Right. And there's like, a little bit of information about the quilts, you know, whatever they could gather or have about it. So
You know, it depends, because on some of the early quilt documentation projects, they, you know, they had, they maybe were only able to collect sparse information about the quilt, and maybe the photograph was still sort of a rough, you know, take a photograph of the quilt hanging from a clothesline outside. but that's okay. That is documentation that, you know, that was worth doing. And for a quilter who's looking for inspiration, that photo will do. But then, you know, my colleagues here down the road at the Western Carolina University has a center, now I'm blanking on the name, Mountain Heritage Center. Well, they had a professional photographer, as did the DAR and several of the museums. So with those quilts, you might even be able to get in, zoom in on a stitch you know, photography is so high resolution.
Yeah, those are fabulous. So you can the Zoom feature's amazing on there.
Yeah, and for a quilter, you know, one of the searches I did, I was just fooling around before we got on, and mm-hmm. you can search, if you choose the search feature, you can search by, like, color, predominant color, special color, overall color, and I chose purple as the predominant color, and then mm-hmm. just clicked on all the ones. You can view it as if it were sort of a grid-like display, so you can see all these little thumbnails of quilts.
Mm.
And you can select ones that you like and then compare them. So they all appear on one page, almost like a scrapbook page.
Wow.
And you can zoom in on them. So, you know, I was looking at quilts that were documented in Florida, Connecticut.
Hmm.
There were some in there in Michigan. And, you know,
wow.
they were from, like, the 1800s to contemporary quilts made recently. So...
Great feature.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that one.
Oh, it's so fun. And then you can even click on the quilts in that view and move them around the page so you can sort of do, sort of compare proportions of borders and scale and stuff like that. It's really
now
fun.
I need more days.
Yeah, it's addictive. Yeah. It's going to take
even
some time.
Even more days. Well, tell me before, I want to be sure we get this information in for everybody, because
sure.
you can become a member of the Quilt Alliance, and tell me a little bit about what that entails, being a member.
Sure. Our members support our project, so it's a way to support us, and it's a, you know, you can become a member for as little as $25 a year, and there are other levels, and you receive a little lapel pin that has our logo, but it also entitles you to discounts when we have in-person events. Like the quilt conference I mentioned coming up in July, like Quilters Take Manhattan. And then you get a deep discount on our contest that we do every year. And I just posted information about our contest this year. It's called 20, and it's related to our, in honor of our 20th anniversary. And The quilt contests that we do are so easy to take on because the theme is very open-ended. In fact, this year the theme is 20, and you can interpret that any way you want, you know, by the number, the word 20, the concept, the quantity, any way you want to do it. And I'm going to pledge on the air here that I will be making a contest quilt this year.
Oh, good. I will sort of pledge.
Okay.
I'm not like 100%, but it's like May 1st is the deadline. So.
May 1st is the deadline.
Oh, yeah. Amy. Ah. So
if I can do it, people.
Yes.
Masterful creative quilters can do it.
Yeah, and they're not big quilts. They're small.
It's 20 inches by 20 inches this year. And, you know, the grand prize is an HQ Suite 16 machine quilting system by a handy quilter. So well worth your time to take a chance on that. And all of the quilts become a donation to the Alliance. So you are using your creativity to support our work. And because we auction the quilts on eBay and they get a lot of love. And it's such a great fundraiser for us. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of fabulous people put their quilts in. And so you have a chance to own something made by somebody you might, you know, admire their work, which is, you know, pretty nifty.
That's right. And most of the quilts end up going for a really reasonable price. In fact, it's, you know, it's crazy that you could get a quilt by some of the folks who've donated for the amount that you get them. And then sometimes, like Mark Lipinski this year, threw in a special spend the day at my studio with me if you win my quilt in the auction prize. And that really, of course, raised a lot of interest. And that
and some of the
really
quilts
happy.
Are so spectacular that they themselves get a big bidding, like Jamie Fingal's quilts.
That's right. Jamie Fingal's quilt this year, the I think the end price was over $1,500, $1,600, I think, you know, but the majority of them go for between $50 and $100, which is a great way to collect small quilts by some of your favorite artists and maybe some people that you never heard of. But the quilt, something about the quilt or what they said about it really, really hit home with you.
And people can see the prior contests so they get a feel for what
That's
kind
right.
of work people did.
Yeah, all of the contests are archived not only on our website, but on, in the Quilt Index. That's another sort of incentive is that your quilt will then become a part of this database, and anyone searching the Quilt Index for a pattern or something that matches your quilt will see it. And for the past couple of years, we've been partnering with this company called Voice Quilt so that you can also, as a contestant, record your artist statement. So I used one of the artist statements in our year-end video this last year. You can look at our YouTube channel to see it. Sonia Carl had read part of a Beatles song in her artist statement or included it, and it was, she has this great accent, and it was just so beautiful, and it makes the quilt mean something when you can sort of see, you know, hear this rich voice of the person that made this quilt by hand. It's really special.
Yeah, that, I really like that part. That's, I love the radio part. The
yeah,
words.
Right.
Yeah,
it's a whole other level of richness and information.
Now, what is the, where is the event this summer? It's in July.
The event this summer is in Herndon, Virginia, and that is in association with the Sacred Threads exhibit. So Lisa Ellis, who is the coordinator for Sacred Threads, is on our board, and she invited us to have our first oral history conference there, and it's at the Florist United Methodist Church, and it's on July 20th, and we'll be releasing information about it soon. So if you live in the area, which you do, right?
That's the town I live in.
Oh my goodness! Well, you definitely have to be our special guest star.
Oh, that would be fun. I would love it.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it when I saw that earlier. I thought, is that right? That's my town.
Yeah, we haven't put the save the date out there yet, but you were the first, and actually, really, I do want to talk to you about being a part of it, because I think that it's our first attempt at doing something this large, but we want to be able to offer a hands-on workshop, not only on QSOS, but hear from folks like Tyra Hicks, who are doing work on self-publishing, or, you know, some of our colleagues who are doing writing about quilters' histories. There's a lot happening. And as you say, this is the work that you do. You're saving stories every day.
Well, Amy, this has been thrilling for me. Absolutely thrilling.
Me too.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
Everybody go out and visit at quiltalliance.org. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit me at patsloan.com. See if I'll be visiting you somewhere in your area. And visit our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.